sleepyhead.
I'm not letting you go to work today.
Wait, what?
Everybody, listen up.
Welcome to The Drive.
Morning, morning, morning.
You're going to talk.
Get on the phone at 339-1140.
Pretty awesome, huh?
Jump in on our text line at 441140.
Everyone is talking about it. You must know that.
The Drive starts now.
Here's Heald straight away for three. Nothing but net. But a Heald knocks down the triple. He has seven of Sacramento's 16 points. Kings for a third time are leading by five, 16 to 11. Dribble penetration, reach in by White. Challenged successfully, grabbed by Fox. Ahead to Heald, going to go for another quick three. And scores another triple. What a Heald with back-to-back buckets from downtown. Let's make that your early Petkus Brothers moment of the game.
That was your Petkus Brothers moment of the game. Get the spectacular backyard you have always wanted with a beautiful Petkus Brothers patio or sunroom. The best price, best value, guaranteed every day. Petkus Brothers. Welcome back into The Drive. Kyle Madsen and Matt George filling in for Carmichael Dave today. Celebrating a 104-99 Kings win over the Spurs last night. The Kings split their homestand 2-2. And Matt, you and I spoke before the homestand.
Did we?
We did. I don't know if you remember. But we spoke before the homestand and said 2-2 is what we envisioned. But you and I both envisioned a loss, a couple of wins, and then a loss. It went loss, win, loss, win. So they fell to the Raptors in a close game. Then they beat the Timberwolves. They lost to the Lakers in their worst game of the year.
Right.
And then they come back and they beat the Spurs. The bounce back after the Laker game was something I was really keeping an eye on. Because mm-hmm. they had a couple days off. But how they responded after getting beat so soundly at home, with so many of the opposing team's fans in the arena, just kind of a weird night. How they bounced back from that was going to be huge, and they responded in a big way. You mentioned they had a terrible time taking care of the basketball against Los Angeles. They did a great job of it against the Spurs. They got Harry Giles back. He looked excellent. De'Aaron Fox put the team on his back. Bogdan Bogdanovic looked great. Everybody came out and stepped up in a game that really they needed, because I think if you fall to 7-7 with back-to-back losses before going on this road trip to Memphis and Houston,
the Rockets.
If you go to 7-7 with back-to-back losses before hitting that road trip, that's tough.
Especially and it's not just that. You come home, you have Oklahoma City a week from yesterday, so next Monday you have Oklahoma City. And then it gets really tough because you have a three-game stretch of two against Utah and, oh yeah, one in Golden State against the Warriors. So it was, I mean, it's not must-win this early, but it certainly changes the momentum for you. And now you look at, okay, two-game home or a road trip. Can you get one? Go 500. Return home against Oklahoma City. Can you get that one? And then that three-game stretch against the Jazz and the Warriors. Can you get one there? I mean, if the Kings can find a way to make it to December, get through this 10-game stretch, and still be 500, when they started this 10-game stretch, beginning with the Raptors, I said, if they can go 4-6 and be 500 heading out of this stretch and heading into December, they're going to be in very good shape, because there are a lot of very winnable games on your home floor early on in December that the Kings can use to get back over 500, but they just got to wade through this storm a little bit. And so far, with the 2-2 homestand, they're doing just that.
Yeah, it's huge. They're 8-6, as we mentioned. They have seven games left in November. They can go 3-4 and still finish November above 500.
Yep.
So between at Memphis, at Houston, home Oklahoma City, at Utah, at Golden State, home Utah, home Clippers. If you asked me at the beginning of the season, I would say they'd be lucky to win one of those.
Yeah. You're probably losing out.
But with the way they're playing, Are you writing them off against at Memphis? I'm not.
No.
At Houston?
I don't know what Houston is. Yeah, and actually, what scares me is now that they're post Carmelo, or Carmelo seems to be on the outs, that looks to me like a game where, okay, the Rockets are back. Because they already had something like that with Carmelo not playing. That I'm worried about that. That's the narrative I'm afraid of. Because I genuinely believe this, and I'm not just harping on the guy. And I get why LeBron and D-Wade are coming to the defense of their friend, but there's a reason why they're coming to his defense but not wanting him on their team. Sure. Carmelo Anthony drags teams down. The Houston Rockets gave up a lot this summer, lost a lot of defense, added Carmelo Anthony, and went from top team in the West to seller and a little bit of a joke.
Yeah.
Carmelo Anthony leaves. They immediately look better again. I'm concerned more about that game than the Memphis game, although I don't think the Memphis game is going to be easy by any means.
Yeah, and then their home against Oklahoma City is certainly a winnable game. Oklahoma City's been playing better, but it's not a game that you're chiseling in a loss for the Kings.
No. They should win that game.
They played Utah tough in the opener. They play them twice.
They should win one of those.
One of those two. At Golden State, how healthy is Golden State going to be?
Right. Kings had success against the Warriors last year, too.
Yeah. And then you're home against the Clippers, who are kind of a mixed bag.
Clippers are tough. I like the Clippers a lot. I love Lou Williams. I like how hard they fight. I think that's going to be an extremely entertaining ballgame.
Yeah, they beat the Warriors last night in overtime, I believe, 121-116, thanks in large part, like you said, to Lou Williams. So there's three wins in there to be had,
mm-hmm.
at least.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's ideal when you're in this position, and you don't obviously want to get ahead of your – we don't want to get ahead of ourselves here, but – getting just through November, and like you said, this 10-game stretch starting with Toronto, I guess it's 11 games, starting with Toronto, you can get through that above 500. Now you're looking at why can't they finish around that for the year?
No, and we're talking about the Kings putting themselves in a very good position. Now they have to win the games that they should win on their home floor, which is always a question mark with this team. And make sure they keep the focus through all of December, through the holiday season. But we're looking at a team putting themselves in a phenomenal position to begin the calendar year 2019, 4-6 games over 500, which would be beyond a monumental success.
Yeah, if they're sitting at 11-10, and here's why that getting to December at or above 500 is so important. Because you start December at home against Indiana, okay, tough game, but it's at home. Then at Phoenix, at Cleveland, at Indiana, at Chicago.
That should be four wins.
Yes.
The Kings should win all four of those games, and that's not unheard of, and that's not me being an optimist. The Kings are a better team than those four teams. I don't care that the Phoenix Suns got the number one overall pick and have Devin Booker. The Suns should not even be able to sniff what the Kings are doing right now.
No, the Suns are 2-11. They are not playing well. And even if the Kings weren't above 500, even if the Kings were about as good as we expected them to be, when you're looking at a stretch of at Phoenix, at Cleveland, at Indiana, and at Chicago, you're looking at three very winnable games there.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're at a point where we're going, are those should-win games for the Kings?
I think they already are.
I don't know why not.
Yeah. I mean, the Kings believe they can beat anybody on any given night, and based off of what they've shown so far, now things can change before we get to that point, but based off of what we've seen so far, it would be a disappointment for the Kings to lose those games, regardless of if they're on the road or at home. Really quickly, Kyle, if I can, I want to backtrack to this San Antonio Spurs thing or game last night, because someone on the text line brought this up, and I wanted to address this, and I don't know if you noticed it or you heard it watching the game, but there were fans in attendance in the Golden 1 Center that were booing Rudy Gay every time he would touch the ball and every time he came on the floor. And all I want to say about that, and in the nicest way possible, I say this. Any fan that booed Rudy Gay is a moron, in my opinion. Rudy Gay gave a lot to this franchise that people don't understand and don't recognize. Many also forget and brush under the rug that Rudy Gay re-signed and re-upped his contract in Sacramento being told that Mike Malone was going to be his head coach and being told that they were going in this direction with DeMarcus Cousins and they were going to try and be pushing for an eighth seed in a year or two. And then immediately, days after he signed, they completely pulled out the rug from underneath him. You think DeMarcus Cousins was blindsided by the Kings trading him? What the Kings did to Rudy Gay was an absolute blindside. Now, I'm not villainizing the Kings organization. We know they made a lot of mistakes during that stretch, and I don't think there was any intention by the Kings to piss off Rudy Gay or blindside right. him. But still, Rudy Gay gave his all to the point of a potentially career-ending injury that happened for the Kings. He has battled back, and he's made something of himself and found a role on a really good Spurs team. For you to boo Rudy Gay for what he gave to this franchise, for being the best small forward since that this Kings team has had, really since Doug Christie, is moronic and stupid. And it just shows the lack of knowledge by some Kings fans, especially when the fact with Marco Bellinelli was coming into the game and you weren't booing him. That's, to me, it was ridiculous. And I hope Kings fans, maybe they were having their fun. And if you paid for your ticket, you have a right to boo and voice your opinion, do whatever you want. But King fans started to pick up the booing a little bit more as he would come into the game and every time he would touch the ball. And I just think that's very unwarranted. Rudy Gay is an incredible athlete, a hell of a guy, and he gave his all to Sacramento when he was here.
I think that comes back to Kings fans' kind of persecution complex.
And sorry to interrupt you. Text line, no, they were not saying Rudy. When he checked into the game, they were booing him. Nobody was saying Rudy. It was boos. It happened in the section right in front of the media area.
And that is where, and A's fans kind of have a similar thing, where anything that a player or a team does against your team, so Rudy going elsewhere to play after his time in Sacramento is just, it's taken as the proverbial middle finger to the franchise, and people don't like that. And I get that, but Matt's absolutely right. Rudy Gay did nothing wrong to the Kings, to the city of Sacramento, and I'm guessing that was a small handful of fans that got kind of a chorus of boos started. I don't think Kings fans as a collective have anything against Rudy Gay.
And also, I want to address this too on the text line really quick, and I know we're over. Rudy Gay did say that the Kings became kind of basketball hell for him and he wasn't basketball hell, but he said it under wraps to his teammates, to George Hill, who then sold that information out or came out with that information later. Rudy Gay did not go public with that. Everybody's entitled to their opinion. And to be fair, Rudy Gay was put in an element of basketball hell with the change of coaches, with the change of GM, with how they pulled the rug out right. from underneath him.
He didn't say Sacramento sucks. It wasn't like the Kings had this foundation of success and Rudy Gay was crapping on it.
Kings fans have said far worse on this very show about their own team. So there's nothing wrong with what Rudy said. Yes. He's not wrong. He was in basketball hell.
Hey, Hugh Jackson got a job. I feel like I have to pay this off before we get to the break. Marvin Lewis, this is via Ian Rappaport. Bengals coach Marvin Lewis officially announced Hugh Jackson's move to his staff as a special assistant to the head coach, not a special assistant head coach, a special assistant to the head coach. Quote, I have a great comfort level with Hugh and his ability to assist me with the day-to-day responsibilities on defense. So that's where the Bengals are at. Hugh Jackson, recently fired Browns coach, is once again employed. Four Down Territory is coming up next. We're going to talk about getting rid of the coin toss before NFL games. The Niners, the silver linings in their loss last night, our MVP through Week 10, and then we're going to look at Mark Davis saying that he wants the Raiders to play in Oakland in 2019. That's all coming up next on The Drive. It's Sports 1140 KHGK.
It's time for Four Down Territory on The Drive. First down.
Four Down Territory brought to you by Fire Wings. Just went to Fire Wings this weekend. Enjoyed the garlic parmesan, underrated flavor that we don't talk about enough. Garlic parmesan, just one of 21 delicious flavors to choose from at Fire Wings. Find the location nearest you at firewings.com. Fire Wings, just wing it.
Time for our game-winning drive, just like Eli Manning. Haha.
Nice, dude.
Too soon? Sorry,
no
fans.
They're 2-8.
Is the coin toss really necessary, or should they just let the home team pick what they want to do?
I would just, because the visiting team calls the toss, so I would let the visiting team pick, if anything. But no, I see no reason to get rid of the coin toss. This is something I super don't feel one way or the other about. It doesn't add really any time before the games. They have it timed out to where the kickoff's going to happen at 5:15 or 1:25 or whatever. And the coin toss is just something that happens before that. It's a good fair way to decide what's how the game starts.
Yeah.
I don't see any reason to get rid of it.
Yeah, I'm 100% with you. The tradition of it, even you talk about Super Bowl Sunday, how they have the coin that is signifies the actual or symbolic for the actual Super Bowl itself, and then you have Hall of Famers flip the coin, and it provides an, I mean, it's like the jump ball in the NBA. It provides a fair way for one team to decide, and it's very tactical. Most coaches prefer to defer to have the ball in the second half, but a lot of coaches or some coaches like to have the ball first and try and establish the offense right away and take an early lead. So you don't want to take that element of potential strategy out of the game just by awarding the home team even more of an advantage for just being or for already being at home.
Yeah, keep the coin toss unless there's a significant reason to get rid of it. Second down.
Second down.
All right, Kyle, as a Niner fan, were you happier that they lost than if they had won that game last night against New York?
Well, no, because when they win, page views on NinersWire.com are way better.
Hey, that's a great answer.
Thank you. But no, the way they lost is the bothersome thing. They had yet another fourth quarter lead, and their defense kind of just fell apart at the end of the game. Again, their pass rush was bad all game, and so many things that should not continue to be problems are continuing to be problems, and that's a concern for me. So the draft pick is a silver lining in the loss for sure. But I'm not super stoked about it. Yeah, I wasn't like rooting for the Giants, but if they're gonna lose, at least they're gonna get a high draft pick, I guess.
It's that grand old tanking debate, and with a team for as young as they are that needs pieces, I understand why draft picks are more enticing. I don't think there is any chance they were gonna get the number one though, with how great the Raiders are doing at driving themselves deeper into the pit of hell. But I like to see young players going for wins. So I think the Niners overall would have been happier with a win, especially on a primetime game, Monday Night Football, coming off of the win that they had against the Raiders. But, I mean, either way, I mean, it's not really a bad thing. At least the Niners are still in a good position to get a good pick.
It would have been a positive to beat a bad team with as many injuries as the 49ers have. And even if they had beat the Giants, they don't have that many winnable games left on their schedule. So they were going to finish with three or four wins and a top five pick anyways.
Sure.
But no, the draft pick is only a silver lining. Last night, it would have been good for them to win. Third down.
All right, Kyle, who is your MVP after week 10?
It's Drew Brees. I don't know how you pick anyone other than Drew Brees.
I thought I was really going to get away from it, too. I really thought I was trying so hard to convince myself of Gurley. Like, I was trying so hard.
Can't.
But Drew Brees, for what he's doing, for what the Saints are doing, you have to add Drew Brees' age into it. You have to add the type of the way that he plays and how he just, it's so freaking consistent. This guy, I said it last time we were on together, he's like the San Antonio Spurs of the NFL. He just keeps doing it and keeps on doing it, and he's excelling. I'm 100% with you. It has to be Drew Brees.
Did you know Drew Brees has never won an MVP?
Which is broken.
That shocks me. This is a guy who's thrown for 5,000 yards five separate times in his career. And he's never won an MVP. He's led the league in passing and touchdowns a ton of times. But somewhere along the line, Drew Brees started to get underrated, like severely. And he's very rapidly becoming a consensus, like top three all-time quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
And we're watching his masterpiece this season. The team's 8-1. He's completing 77% of his passes. He's throwing for 289 yards a game. He has 21 touchdowns and one interception. He just seems to be getting better. He's 39 years old. And yeah, if I'm voting, it's got to be Drew Brees, and I'm not sure it's even close.
Yeah. Efficiency. That's all you can ask for. Efficiency, and he is that in a nutshell.
Yep. Fourth down.
Fourth down.
one of my favorite humans on the planet, Kyle, Mark Davis.
Your guy.
My guy, my happy little marshmallow. He says that he wants the Raiders to play in Oakland in 2019. Do you believe him?
Yes, and here's why. Because I don't think he has any other options.
Yep.
I think if you gave him a choice and said you can play in any city you want in 2019, your stadium in Vegas is still being built. You don't get to play in that, but you have your pick of city. Oakland is absolutely not at the top of his list.
I tell you what, Mark Davis is begging Oakland to keep him for next season,
yes,
just because he has nowhere to go. And it, honestly, it would be an embarrassment for him to go anywhere else. But, speaking from bitter, angry Oakland fan, get the hell out. I'll help you move and pack up the trucks. I mean, honestly, you've punted this season. You've already showed that you don't give a damn about your Oakland fan base. It's all about Vegas. It's all about what John Gruden wants to do. I don't care how many draft picks they have. If you want to bring out a plethora of young talent and you think fans are going to just be okay with watching another losing team that has maybe a future that's going to just go to Vegas anyway, Oakland doesn't want them here. I think that's pretty clear. But if I'm Mark Davis, hell yeah, I want to stay in Oakland because I have nowhere else to go, and I don't want to play in the StubHub Center.
Yeah, I'm totally with you.
Stadium.
I don't think Mark Davis has any real interest in playing in Oakland other than necessity. And I wouldn't blame Oakland if they just kind of say, see ya. I think that's kind of where we're at with the Raiders and Oakland. But it's going to be fascinating to see. It's an underrated and an underreported storyline, I guess, is the fact that the Raiders don't have a home next year, and we may be looking at a scenario where the Raiders are just a road team next year. Like maybe they play a few games in London and they play a couple games in Mexico City and
make them a
real life scenario that could happen.
Make them the international guinea pig. I don't care, but
yeah.
Oakland is not for them.
They may not have a choice. Mitch, I see you. Dean, I see you both. We got to get to the break. Grant Napier, the Kings play-by-play voice, is going to join us when we come back to talk about the Kings and just kind of talk about where they're, what direction they're heading, because they're sitting at 8-6, heading into a crucial stretch of games, a tough stretch of games to close out November, but in a very good spot to make a push that nobody really foresaw them making prior to this season. So Grant Napier, he joins us next to talk about the Kings on the Drive. It's Sports 1140 KHTK.
It's the Drive on Sports 1140 KHTK.
Welcome back into the Drive. Kyle Madsen and Matt George filling in for Carmichael Dave. Dave should be back tomorrow, but still awaiting word on that. Fleetwood Mac tickets to give away. See Fleetwood Mac at the Golden One Center on November 23rd. Get more info at khtk.com. All KHTK giveaways are powered by RosevilleAutoMall.com. We'll give those away in the third hour. Right now, we're going to get to Dean on the Fire Wings guest line. Dean, what's going on, buddy?
Good morning, fellas. How are you?
We're excellent. How are you doing?
Not bad. Hey, you guys were talking about Drew Brees not winning the MVP. It's surprising, but then look who he's played. He's been in the league. Look at all the great quarterbacks that have been in the league while he's been quarterback.
Right.
And, you know, that's part of the issue. Some guys are, you know, they show up at a time. I think it's timing for him, and people are seeing how good he is because he has been so consistent all these years. And as far as the Raiders go, I mean, I'm not a Raiders fan, but I couldn't – agree more. Make them the NFL's perpetual road team. And, you know, it's whether they, you know, they chose to keep Carr and they got rid of Mac. You know, if they'd kept Mac and got rid of Carr, they'd still be in the same mess because the defense, even with Mac, wasn't that good last year. But, yeah, I'm with you on the on the Raiders. I don't understand why people or even go into the games unless you're rooting for the other team. I mean, I understand fan loyalty, but my gosh, they talk about a franchise that's being abused right now. I feel sorry for the Raider fans. I mean, Oakland Raiders are a national brand. They're like the Cowboys. There's Raiders fans everywhere. And, you know, it just seems like they could have made the transition much just smoother, you know.
Yeah, they've not done a good job with managing that fan base. And thanks for the call, Dean. But that's something the Raiders have failed pretty miserably at, is this transition to Las Vegas and trying to hold on to some of the fan base in Oakland. But right now we want to talk about the Sacramento Kings after their big 104-99 win over the San Antonio Spurs last night. They split the homestand at two games apiece. They moved to 8-6 heading into a crucial stretch of games beginning on the road in Memphis on Friday. And joining us now, who will have all the action for you on the television side, it's Grant Napier. Grant, here with Matt. Thanks for joining us, man.
Yeah, how you guys doing this morning?
Oh, just excellent. And I was talking at the top of the show. Thank goodness for the Kings, because if they weren't as fun and as exciting as they are, it'd be a pretty boring time in Northern California sports right now. I think they're the hottest thing going.
Yeah, they are. I mean, obviously, I think Warrior fans just wait now until the springtime because they know their team is going to be right there when the bell rings. And the regular season is kind of kind of like a ho-hum deal. But, you know, the thing that's really I've noticed here in the last week or two, the Kings are being talked about all over the country now because of the exciting brand of basketball. Like, even after the game last night, it was great to just see on Twitter, you know, all the people that cover the NBA or don't cover the NBA but have followers in the hundreds of thousands that have kind of watched this team play from afar and go, wow, the Sacramento Kings are back. Wow, the Sacramento Kings are a really exciting team. So it's not just here in Sacramento. I think people are noticing this brand of basketball everywhere.
I wanted to get your take on this. They started 8-6, probably a better start than anyone really thought they would get off to. What's been the key for you? Like who has been better, or what's been better than we expected?
Well, De'Aaron Fox. I mean, start right there. I think really, other than Steph Curry, who right now is hurt, and Damian Lillard, who's playing better point guard in the NBA and in the Western Conference than De'Aaron Fox, and I would say nobody. I mean, he is literally playing at an all-star level right now, and that's been the biggest difference. This is a guard-oriented league now, and if you have a top-flight point guard, you have a chance to be pretty good, and he is already at age 20 turning into a top-flight point guard. I don't even think that's debatable, and I will tell you that even speaking last night before the game to Sean Elliott, the TV analyst for the Spurs, he was talking to me about the Kings, and he goes, man, how about De'Aaron Fox? And I said, yeah, and he said, you know, Becky Hammons, who scouts for us, said that she was blown away at his improvement this year. So, you know, and then you hear what Greg Popovich said after the game last night. You know, the culture. You know, we keep on talking about the culture. Well, when the Kings traded DeMarcus Cousins, that was the start of the culture change. And now you are seeing the result of 2 years of changing the culture of this franchise. And it's not, you know, you don't need me to tell you. You can see it with your own eyes. It's night and day.
Well, Grant, in order to be a successful successful point guard in today's NBA, you have to be a good three-point shooter. And that's been the element of De'Aaron's game that we all knew he had to work on this summer. And to me, his shooting stroke looks so good, so improved. And not just that, he's shooting it with such confidence. You would think that he's been a three-point shooter all of his life. What have you seen specifically with De'Aaron Fox with that outside shot that suggests to me, honestly, I think he's added that three-point shot now consistently to his game. And now you're starting to see teams like San Antonio last night, they have to step out on him and they have to respect that because he's making them at over 40% clip.
Yeah, that's a great point. That has been a huge difference in this game. And we always said, you know, when De'Aaron becomes a good outside shooter, he will be unguardable. And you're starting to see that. You know, how do you guard the guy? He's too fast. If you have to go out and honor a shot, he goes right around you. His biggest weapon that he has is his speed. I mean, there's nobody that can keep up with him. And when he's making shots the way he has, you know, you said, what do I attribute that to? I mean, I know he spent pretty much the whole summer in the gym, most of that down in Southern California, and was, from what I understand, every day had a five-hour workout routine that included an immense amount of shooting. And you know what? It's just another example. De'Aaron Fox wants to be great. He doesn't want to just be good. He wants to be great. And he's got that drive. And now, again, we're talking about a 20-year-old playing at this level. It's remarkable. You make a good point. I mean, his three-point shot has completely turned around his game right now.
Continuing with De'Aaron Fox, and one of the things you said earlier when answering one of Kyle's questions, you talked about how everybody around the NBA is starting to take notice how much fun the Kings are. And De'Aaron said as much last night in his post-game press conference. But one of the things that I love that he said was, people are no longer treating the Kings like an easy win. Like they circle that on the calendar as a get right game. People are starting to respect and understand when the Kings either come into your building or you have to go to theirs. It's going to be a tough test and a hard game for you to win and to close out. And I believe that's just the start. And you can tell this team has embraced that mentality.
Well, the Kings have played 14 games, and I'm doing this off the top of my head, but I believe 10 of the coaches on the other team have complimented Sacramento. And, you know, coaches aren't afraid to compliment other teams, but it's not, you know, this is different. I mean, just about everywhere we go, the entire East Coast trip that the Kings started in Miami, after the game, Eric Spoelstra complimenting the team. Before the Orlando game, you know, Steve Clifford absolutely complimenting the team and how they play. In Atlanta, the same thing. Everywhere the Kings have gone, and now, you know, when you get a guy like Greg Popovich complimenting the team, it's spreading. People know this is not just a fluke. You know, I saw a tweet by, you know, Mark Spears, not a tweet, but in the power rankings on ESPN, you know, he mentioned the same thing. You know, these are not the same old Kings anymore, basically. You can, if you think that you're just going to come into Sacramento or you're going to play the Kings and like, oh, okay, we can take the foot off the gas pedal because we're going to win. It's not like that anymore. You know, you can't do that against this team. This team is, I said this after the Miami game on TV when the Kings beat the Heat. And I said on the postgame show to Jim and Jerry, I said, I'm going to. And here we are a couple of weeks later, and I'm still going to say this. The Kings are a good team. Their biggest problem may be they're in the West, but they're a good team. They're going to, if they stay healthy, they're going to win a lot of games. I'll tell you this. There are a lot of people in this community that didn't think the Kings would have 8 wins before the first of the year, and now they're 8-6.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that has to do with, because when I watch the Kings, one of the things that stands out to me is the depth they have. Seems like every five guys they have on the floor, everybody on the court is going to contribute in some way. Is that something that the Kings have gone out of their way to fix? Is the depth and is this this to me at least is the deepest the Kings have been in a long time?
Yeah, they have. They completely overhauled the roster to get a number one culture guys and number two. Perimeter shooting. You know, that's why they picked up Bielitsa. That's why they picked up Yogi Ferrell. You talked already about De'Aaron Fox. I mean, look at what Bogdanovich has meant to this team in his return and how well he played last night. I mean, envision the rest of this season. Again, knock on wood, if everyone stays relatively healthy, you could see how he sets up, you know, the Harry Giles, how he sets up Marvin Bagley. Those guys are going to flourish around Bogdan. But Vlade went out and got an unbelievably athletic team. He had a vision of having, okay, we now have a point guard that's no one's going to be able to keep up with, but it doesn't do any good to have a point guard that can run up and down the court and not have guys that can run with him. So everything that they've done for the most part has been get guys that can play that style of basketball, that are thoroughbreds, that can run up and down with De'Aaron Fox. And so far, so good. That's exactly what we're seeing.
How impressed are you with the tenacity and the lack of a quit in Harry Giles, who struggled early on out of the gate, goes to Stockton, does what he's supposed to do, putting up 30 points, looking like the best player on the floor in the G League, comes back the very next night, gets minutes against a very good San Antonio Spurs team and makes an impact, career-high 12 points, 6 rebounds. Dave Yeager praised his defense on LaMarcus Aldridge last night. How impressed are you with just the work ethic of Harry Giles and always seemingly being ready to go?
Well, last night, for the first time at home, I always go into the locker room on the road after the game, but last night was the first time I waited for the locker room to open because I wanted to go in and give Harry a hug, and that's exactly what I did because I feel so good for the guy. I'm so happy for him because I know what he's been through with his ACL injuries and his 2 years of rehab and getting back to this point and then having it start off slowly this year, which it did, and then accepting the fact that, okay, you know what? All right, I'm going to get my game together. I'm going to go to Stockton. And then to turn around in 24 hours and do what he did last night. And I went up to him last night and I said, hey, man, this is only the beginning, because I really believe that for him. That what we saw last night is only the beginning for him. I thought it was phenomenal. It was incredible. And I'll tell you the other thing that really stuck out to me last night. And I said this after the game with Doug. The thing that impressed me more than anything last night, okay, more than De'Aaron, more than Bogdan, more than Harry, the thing that really stuck out to me was how the Kings played defense in the final 5 minutes of that game last night. Yeah. That was some big-time half-court defense against a 7-4 team. That was what really impressed me last night about the Sacramento Kings. You cannot just ignore that. That was really, really impressive.
We were talking about this a little bit earlier. The next stretch of games are at Memphis, at Houston. They have games in Utah and Golden State, but then they're home for Oklahoma City, home against Utah. They're home against the Clippers. Have we reached a point where when you look at a seven-game stretch like that, you're looking at three or four wins?
Not yet, and I think it's a great question because I had this question last night asked to me by somebody else. Because somebody asked me about the playoffs, I go, I'm not going there. I'm not going to the playoffs until you get to 2019. It's way too early. I'm not looking that far ahead right now. You just talked about a brutal, brutal stretch starting in Memphis. And even though they lost last night, they have some unbelievable wins this year against really good teams. But you talked about Utah. You talked about Golden State. Look at what the Clippers have done and look where they're at right now. So I'm hoping you're right. You know, I'll tell you right now, I would take three or four wins in that stretch. If you told me I could get that without even playing any of those games, this is a daunt. We said this at the beginning of the month. If the Kings can get through November and still be standing, they've got a chance to have a really, really good December, barring injury. This is a brutal month for the Sacramento Kings. And so far, they're hanging in there, and they're still two games above 500. But that stretch you just mentioned is going to be a real barometer, a real good indicator of exactly how far the Sacramento Kings have come.
I know you're not ready to say playoffs with this team, and rightfully so. I don't think anybody should, except for maybe the players themselves. Bogdan Bogdanovic said last night that this team genuinely believes they are playoff bound or they can compete at a playoff level, and that was their motivation heading into this season. And that's what you want to hear, Grant, from your team, right? Even if they're young, even if they're trying to figure things out, you want them to believe that they can overachieve and surprise everybody and shock the world.
I was with Nemanja Bjelica in Denver. So, I mean, that's all, we're going back pretty far now, okay? And we were talking about, we were with a group of people and somebody said, boy, could you imagine this team with Zach LaVine? And I can't remember how the conversation went, but I made a comment of, well, I'll tell you this, you know, you probably wouldn't be here right now, you know, because let's be honest, if they had signed Zach LaVine, I don't know if they would have had money to sign them. And then I said, but this team probably would have been a surefire playoff team. And Nemanja goes, we are still a playoff team, you know, like or something to that magnitude. And I smiled because I just love the fact that here's a guy that's 30 years old. You know, he's a veteran. And he sees the potential in this team. This was, you know, what, two weeks ago or more. So, you know, again, I really like the vibe in the team. You guys just referenced what De'Aaron Fox said last night. The Kings aren't sneaking up on anybody anymore. Everyone around the league now understands this is a different team. This is a team with a top-flight point guard, with guys that can just sprint and run up and down the floor. And here's another thing that people need to realize. The Kings are only going to get better because Marvin Bagley is going to continue to get better. We saw Harry Giles last night. You know, this team is still new in terms of playing with one another. When they figure it all out with Bogdan and the way he sets up his teammates, this team should be getting better. They should not be going south. They should be going north. So, again, you know, I'm holding my breath somewhat, but this team has a chance to be pretty darn special this year.
Hey, Grant, I know you were pretty busy last night calling the Kings 104.99 win as we talked to Grant Napier, voice of the Kings and host of the Grant Napier Show from 3 to 7 right here on Sports 1140. Did you even bother going back and rewatching Niners Giants?
Well, I didn't have to go back and, you know, go back and watch it. I watched it live.
Oh.
So I didn't miss a play.
Okay.
I didn't miss a play of the game. I did watch the entire game. The thing that surprised me more than anything, I thought the 49ers would get more pressure on Eli Manning. I thought the Niners' defensive front would abuse the Giants' offensive line.
Yeah.
And so that surprised me the most, even on the final drive. And Eli finally had time to look down the field last night. That's the thing that surprised me the most. I really thought that before the game, I said to Doug on my radio show, on our show yesterday, I thought that the Niners' defense would give the offensive line of the Giants fits to a point where the Giants would not be able to throw the ball down the field, but that didn't happen last night. That surprised me probably more than anything.
Yeah, that was really tough to watch. The Niners, after dominating the Raiders the way they did, I thought they'd do something similar to the Giants. I was right there with you, and they just, yep. I think there were like two series. They had one sack, and then they had another series where they got decent pressure on a third down, but other than right. that, it was non-existent. It's tough to
watch.
Yeah,
because, you know, every team the Giants have played this year have abused their offensive line. I mean, the Giants, there was only one, and this is hard to understand how this was, but when the Giants beat Houston in week three, they didn't get as much pressure on Eli Manning as other teams, and you think, well, how could that happen? But, you know, I was shocked by that last night. You know, the Giants' offensive line has been so bad. You just alluded to the last game against the Raiders. I kind of draw a parallel between how bad the Raiders' offensive line is and the Giants, and you know they just could not do the job up front last night. And you know, again, we've always said if you give Eli Manning time and protect him, he's going to beat you, and he did last night to the 49ers. I was surprised. I thought the 49ers were going to win that game last night. I was a little surprised by the outcome. And then, you know, the more I watch Saquon Barkley, the more I just realize, okay, if I'm the Giants, I don't care about what happens in the offseason. I've got to go out and get a completely new offensive line because he's a special guy. I mean, he's not just another running back. He's a big-time special player.
Yeah, I'm starting to think the 49ers might just not be very good. That's my.
There are a lot of teams that can say that this year in the NFL, you know?
Well, Grant, the Kings are heading to Memphis, and I know you're excited to spend a few days down in Memphis.
I cannot wait, but the good news is we don't get there until Thursday evening, and I'm going to get right from the plane to do my radio show. And then Friday, we play, and then we fly right out. So that's the best part. You get there, and then you play a game, and you leave. So I'm okay with it. I'm going to be just fine.
Very good. The Kings are in Memphis, as I just said, and then they're going to head to Houston on Saturday before coming home to face the Oklahoma City Thunder on Monday. We'll have all of those games for you right here on Sports 1140, and you can watch Grant on NBC Sports. Grant, thanks so much for taking a few minutes, and we'll talk to you soon, okay?
All right, boys. Have a great day. Take care.
Thanks, Grant. As Grant Napier, listen to him on the Grant Napier Show with Doug Christie on Sports 1140 from 3 to 7. And Grant said it. This is a brutal stretch of games coming up for the Kings, but you've got to like the way they're playing heading into it. And there's a real chance that they finish up November with a record above 500 if they keep playing as well as they have. And if they prove themselves in this stretch, I think then we can start maybe having an inkling of a whisper of this possibly being a playoff team. When we come back, we've got Matt Barrows, 49ers beat writer for The Athletic, going to dive a little further into that Niners loss last night and some of the implications of a 27-23 loss to the New York Giants. That's coming up next, right here on Sports 1140.